And thank you to Dr. Buckley and Dr. Puck, who are both involved with his care. I'm here today to talk a little bit about it. I'm a medical geneticist. I got appointed to the Secretary's Advisory Committee for my expertise in genomics. They had no idea I had a SCID baby. And at the first meeting, Dr. Buckley was there. And I said, "What are you doing here?" And she said, "Well, Amy, don't you know SCID is a pediatric emergency, and it's the perfect case study for newborn screening." So I learned a lot as being part of that committee, and what they impressed on me is newborn screening is a system. You heard from Dr. Buckley and Dr. Puck about the importance of early diagnosis and treatment for SCID, but also as we do population-based screening, we're finding so many different types of cases, and what we really need is long-term follow-up. So we need to know how these little guys are doing, little guys or girls are doing throughout their lifespan. Are they in the right grade in school? Are they able to get a job that, you know, exposes them out in the environment? Are they able to participate in athletic events? So we really want to develop a system to follow these cases. So there were a lot of key milestones. I got to talk with Dr. Buckley and Dr. Puck at this same conference in 2013. So this is a slide from 2013 where we sort of reviewed all the things that went into implementing SCID in state public health labs. You see down on the bottom sort of our rock stars of immune deficiency. This is the actual number of times Dr. Buckley and Dr. Puck presented to the Secretary's Advisory Committee. They came to every meeting and said, "This is important. You need to take a look at it." SCID is always going to be sort of the case study of adding a new condition to newborn screening. Groups around the world really look to the advisory committee and what you all have done in implementing this for a case study of how to do other diseases. So today my job is just to tell you about a few important events that have happened over the last few years. In 2014, Dr. Puck and Dr. Buckley and other colleagues published the experiences of 11 state newborn screening programs. This publication was very important because as the Secretary's Advisory Committee recommended SCID newborn screening in 2010, we could hear sort of the panic from the 50 state programs. This was the first time in those state programs they had to look at DNA as a first-tier test. Usually they look at protein profiles and other chemical tests. This was the first time they had to really gear up and begin looking at DNA assays. So in this paper, there were 3 million infants that were reported on. About half of those came from California because, as Dr. Puck said, their high birth rate and because they were one of the first to begin statewide screening. This paper reported on 52 cases. They found that an overall incidence of about 1 in 58,000 that Dr. Puck says is sort of holding up over the last few years. They also found that there were no cases of SCID that were initially missed by TREC screening. And important for the state programs, there was no overdiagnosis of SCID. What we heard is the state program lab managers went to their advisory committees times 50. What they heard is, "We're going to get all these kids and we're not going to know how to treat them." And so this paper was important to sort of establish this TREC assay is very specific. And as Dr. Puck said, as we look across newborn screening, the 50 or so conditions we now screen for, this was the most specific test we've ever seen. I also want to talk a little bit about, as I said, it's really important to track health outcomes. The Hunter Kelly Newborn Screening Research Program actually funds the work that I do at the Newborn Screening Translational Research Network. This is a research institute that's part of NICHD. This little guy is Hunter Kelly. His dad was also at the first advisory committee meeting, Bill Kelly, quarterback for the Buffalo Bills. He was there to advocate for screening for his little guy, leukodystrophy, which is called Krabbe disease. So part of this effort, the Newborn Screening Saves Lives Act, was actually a $100 million effort passed by Congress and signed into law by President Bush in 2008. This established the Hunter Kelly Newborn Screening Research Program, and it has three big jobs that I work on: to discover new technologies, to screen for new types of diseases, to add diseases to nationwide screening, and develop new treatments. So what we did with our funding is to create the Newborn Screening Translational Research Network. We were trying to create the infrastructure for states, for researchers, for clinicians to implement new conditions as part of newborn screening. We also established a way to track health outcomes. So as I said, we want to follow these kids as they go throughout their lifespan. We want to know what happens to them. You saw the genetic diversity that Dr. Puck talked about. We want to know how the health outcomes track with each of those types of diagnoses and see if we can improve the job that we're doing across the United States. So it's a really collaborative effort. We're working with Dr. Puck and the PIDTC, the Primary Immune Deficiency Treatment Consortium, which is also funded by NIH. So we're working together with groups that are already collecting information on these kids and trying to, as I said, improve what we're doing so we can maximize their health outcomes. There's also a lot of funding opportunities that are currently being out there. You heard from Dr. Puck, there's probably about 75% of the babies in the United States are currently screened for SCID. We're 5 years after the recommendation. So what the federal agencies are continuing to do is to step up with more money. So HRSA actually is funding state implementation. This is $2 million given directly to states to help them buy the equipment, the DNA detecting equipment that they need in the laboratory to train them to get all the personnel that they need to actually start SCID newborn screening. There are 10 states that are funded right now in a cooperative agreement through APHL, and money was recently given to the Jeffrey Modell Foundation to also do the same type of work. CDC is also looking at sort of that genetic heterogeneity that Dr. Puck talked about, and they're looking at actually sequencing the genes that are related to SCID and immune deficiencies. They want to learn more about what types of genes, what types of things should we be looking at when we screen for low TREC numbers. The SCID Implementation Awards by HRSA, they're in red, so you can see this is a two-year funding effort. So at the end of 2 years, screening will have started in these states. So we hope that in addition to screening, as I said, it's a system. So remember, we have these states all have to gear up and get those immunologists, get those professionals on board so that they can begin starting to screen and starting to see these cases. As Dr. Puck said, it's screening and then diagnosis. So we need sort of armies of immunologists in these red states ready to take these screen positive kids throughout the rest of the trajectory. The Newborn Screening Saves Lives Reauthorization Act is exciting. It was enacted by President Obama in December 2014. It amended the Public Health Service Act to extend those grant programs that I talked about. In addition to funding states to actually implement SCID newborn screening, they're actually funding clinicians, they're funding health epidemiologists to really look across the lifespan for all the conditions that are part of newborn screening and make sure that we're doing our job. Newborn screening is designed to save lives and reduce morbidity and mortality. Without following these cases, we're not going to know whether we did that. It also maintains resources for the newborn screening, including the advisory committee that Dr. Buckley and Dr. And myself served on. It also establishes clear roles for federal partners, and it added FDA to the interagency coordinating committee. That sounds like a lot of acronyms, but what that means is as we look at gene sequencing, FDA is part of the conversation because they regulate molecular devices. So we need them to get on board to understand what we're doing in state public health labs so they can be a partner and sort of not stop the research and the implementation that we're working on. It also expands the Hunter Kelly Newborn Screening Research Program, and it updates the federal policy for protection of human subjects. So that's the interesting part. So as Dr. Puck said, Minnesota and Texas actually got sued by privacy advocates who were worried about the states retaining those dry blood spots. Without dry blood spots, did, newborn screening would not have happened. Well, at the end, at sort of the late hours before Congress passed this law, Rand Paul, a Republican from Kentucky, working with the privacy advocates who sued Minnesota and Texas, they put an amendment into this law. It now requires federally funded research on newborn screening, dry blood spots to be considered research on human subjects. That means we now have to get consent to use every one of those dry blood spots beginning in March 2015. So, as Dr. Puck said, California has warehouses of this wonderful research resource. That has now stopped. It has stopped as of March 2015. No states are saving their dry blood spots until the OHRP, the Office of Human Research and Protection, sort of writes the rules about how do we do this. It makes sense. Why not ask the parents for consent? Well, when you look across 4 million babies in the United States and doing the dry blood spots, the sort of the little heel prick in the hospital, there's no feasible way to do consent. And so actually each state is trying to figure out how to do this. And for now, dry blood spot storage has really stopped. So this is a significant impact on newborn screening research and practices. It actually stopped two pilots that we're part of for Pompe disease and for MPS1. We got those pilots restarted because we talked to OHRP and told them this is really the trajectory of implementing a new test. Without doing statewide screening, we're never going to know if these tests work. So this is really important. If you're excited about getting involved in advocacy, I'm sure you can talk to the immune deficiency folks about how to sort of help us figure out how to implement this rule. So I have a lot of people to thank, a lot of people that I'm representing here today, and this is just a little picture of my little guy. He was transplanted at the University of Minnesota, and I said now he's 23 with his twin siblings, but he recently had a kidney stone, so I would love to have somebody following that. Does that mean anything? Is it his diet, too much salt? Who knows? So again, I'm representing the American College of Medical Genetics. You can look at us, you can follow us, you can email me if you have any ideas or want to get involved in anything that we're doing. Thank you.